Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Adore.fm, and ChiroRadio.com, and wherever else podcasts are available. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 310 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a wonderful show for you this week. Legendary bass player, musician, genius, punk rock genius, Kim Warnick will be joining us here shortly on the telephone from Portland, Maine. And this is a long episode. And it's something that I've been wanting to do for a very, very long time. Kim Warnick makes me very nervous. She's one of those fixtures in the Seattle rock scene and like Seattle rock history. That I don't know. I venerate a lot of people. I think very highly of a lot of people in the that have been around in the Seattle music scene for many, many years, and Kim Warnick is one of those people. And I have always wanted to talk to her as part of this show, but never really had the, for lack of a better term, never really had the balls to reach out and see if she wanted to come on, because I just figured that, Kim Warnick is cool, man. She doesn't want to do a podcast. She doesn't want to do a podcast. But so, a couple of months ago, I get this email or a Facebook message from none other than Kim Warnick saying that she loves the show and that she would really like to come on. And I was very surprised by that, right? I said yes. And wanted to do it. And it happened. It frickin' happened, man. She listens to the show religiously while she's at work, and she loves it, and she's ready to talk about her life. I don't know if she's really done an interview like this before, and she did express some nerves surrounding doing it to me. And, you know, I had to kind of tell her, I was like, we don't have to really talk about anything you don't want to talk about. But she really did just want to open up and talk about her history with addiction, the death of her brother, a suicide attempt, and her life, man, and how she got into music. And it's a fascinating story. It's very, very interesting and a little bit sad. And we just really go for it, and Kim really opens up and is very candid in this here episode 310. So I hope you guys really enjoy it. Kim, like I said, has been in the Seattle music scene for a very long time. She's been in this band, the Fastbacks, that was a very important part of the punk scene here in Seattle for many years, and has opened and played shows and toured the world with bands like Pearl Jam, and I think they've played with Guns N' Roses. I think I could be wrong on that, but many, many big bands that they have toured the world with, and yeah, it's time for Kim Warnick to share her story, man. She's also been in bands Visqueen, which I loved back in college, man. Really got into Visqueen. And this other band, Cali Giraffes, which we're going to play a song for you off of their first album for our first musical break. What else should I say? This is a long episode. So we're going to forego going into the emails and things like that, and then just get right into the chat here with Kim. With that said, I would still love to receive more of your emails on things that you loved about Air Raid. Keep my ego just nice and afloat here, people. And what you're going to miss about it, or if you have any questions that you'd like to ask, some burning questions. We've been getting a ton of those. So hopefully next week we will be getting to some more of those emails. You can email me at aaron@air-raid.net with your questions or comments about the show, because of course it is coming to an end the first week in October. Nothing more to say about that. We've been going on and on about that kind of shit, right? Yeah. Okay. Kim Warnick. I've met Kim twice in my life, in person. Both times were very embarrassing moments for me, because I knew who Kim was. Like I said, I have been a fan of hers for a very long time. Big fan of Visqueen, big fan of the Fastbacks, although I didn't know much about the Fastbacks at the time that I had met her. Once was in college, she was playing with Visqueen, and they were standing outside of the sub building at my college at Central Washington University. And I had a ponytail at that time, and it was at a point in my life where I was very self-conscious about the ponytail. I was just too lazy to get it cut off. And I knew what I looked like. And then Kim and Rachel Flotard are standing outside of the sub and proceeded to talk with us a little bit. Me and this group of guys that we were walking in to go see the show. And it was just very embarrassing for me. Very, very embarrassing. I can't remember what I said, but I do remember that I probably said something very dumb and giggled like a little... an excited little schoolboy, meeting people that he truly admired. And then the other time was at my bachelor party. We ended up at the Cha Cha Lounge, and I was extremely, extremely drunk, and held a door open for Kim as she was walking towards the bathroom, and basically kind of had to prop myself up on the door because I could barely stand. And Kim said to me, "Oh, what a gentleman," or something to that effect. And it just mumbled something back at her. And I will always remember that as a very embarrassing moment of my life as well. So you can imagine that having her on this show and getting contacted by her saying that she is a fan and she wants to come and basically spill her guts was a real, real moment for me. So this was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun to get to talk with Kim. And like I said, she was pretty nervous about talking about some of this stuff, even to the point where, you know, I sent the audio file over to her so she could, ask me if she wanted me to take anything out or anything like that. Because, these are not gotcha. These are not supposed to be gotcha interviews. But she enjoyed it. And we're not going to take anything out, man. We're not going to take anything out. One more thing before we get into this. This was done over the phone. And the connection at times can be a little bit trying. So just bear with it. The longer you listen to it, the more used to it your ears will be, and you'll be able to make out some of the stuff that if you're just kind of, you know, perusing it, you might not be able to make out. But that's the nature of a phone interview, right? Yeah. Okay. So let's go with our first musical break, folks. We're featuring music from Kim Warnick. Let's see. Let's go with this one, Cali Giraffes. This one's called All My Life off of their debut single on Finn Records, which I believe is no more as well. So this is a fun one, fun track, man. And then after that, we'll get into our chat with the legendary Kim Warnick of the Fastbacks, Cali Giraffes and Visqueen. All right. This is... I already forgot. This one's called All My Life, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Know at the cha-cha, who knows, that could have gone any different kinds of ways
for you
jerk there, because there, and it was kind of a trying environment.
Yeah,
and I was kind of a mess, but I'm glad that it was an okay night for you, and I'm glad I didn't say anything stupid.
Well, no, you made me feel very very nice.
That's good.
That's
the story.
So how did you find out about this show, Kim?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, so I work at a call center.
Uh-huh.
Very boring. And I don't know. I feel like I should have a better answer for this. I know that once I found this, it was all over. I mean, I think I've listened to almost all of them, even the people I don't know. Uh-huh. I just enjoy the banter. And so, I don't know. I have no answer. I just happened on it magically, and I'm so glad I did, because like I said, it's gotten me through some afternoons where I just thought, like, you know what? I need, my brain needs feeding.
Well, that is a true honor to have you listen to this show and enjoy it. So thank you.
Yeah, it's really great, and you know, of course, the people I know on there, I love listening to, but you know, just the ones I don't know are so interesting, and everybody's interesting, and so that's why podcasts are the new television. What I think.
Yeah.
There's so much you don't know about people, and sometimes just listening to them talk makes you fall in love with them and under their spell. I don't know. It's a different, you know, it's a cool thing, and I'm really glad that I got to experience all these people in your show, and thank you for the show. I'm sorry it's going off the air, but you had a good run, what it looks like to me.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, man, and just being able to, you know, talk to people like yourself has not only been eye-opening, in because I'm the type of person that holds people that make art that I like in very high regard.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and a lot of the times, like, people don't realize that the people that are making the art that you like, in this case, like music that you like, are also just people, right? And they have their own set of problems. They have their own set of issues. They have their own lives that they've been living that usually you don't really hear about. And I've always found it really interesting to hear the stories that kind of have molded the person that make that art, you know?
Well, and it also, you know, you can put it up to you, yourself. And like, you know, a music fan, rock and roll fan, and you hear what this person who you really appreciate, their art, their music, and you think, you realize, like, at the end of the day, like, gosh, they have their hard times too.
Sure.
So do I. And maybe just because I didn't put out a bunch of records doesn't mean anything. It means that everybody has a real hard time. It's not getting easier.
No. It surely is not. That's a good way to put it. Also a very very kind of depressing way to put it.
Well, we'll talk more about uplifting things, but just like, that's being honest. It's like, it's, you know, the older we get, the easier it's not getting, and that's just the way it is. And you know, it's just fact.
Yeah. Well, let's go back a little bit. I want to find out more about you, cuz really I you know, I know about the Fastbacks. I know about Vis Queen. I know about Cali Giraffes. But I really don't know about Kim Warnick, the person. Take me back a little bit. Where do you hail from originally? Is it Seattle?
I do hail from Seattle, a place called Wedgwood.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you'd say the North End.
Right.
Although, so, you know, grew up there, born in 59, only child. Stay-at-home mom. My dad was a banker. Grew up in a very regular way, which is funny in as far as what I turned out to be. But, you know, I had an idyllic childhood, as they would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really, I don't know, I knew I was a little different, probably at an early age, in that I just wanted to listen to records in my room.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are records. I'm talking about, like, little kid records.
Sure, sure.
I don't like musicals, but I know I spent a lot of time with Mary Poppins soundtrack. And anyway, so I don't know. I loved playing with the kids in my neighborhood. I didn't like school. I didn't feel like I was learning anything.
Were you a good student?
No, probably not. I got by.
Uh-huh.
I didn't care. I mean, I really loved coming home to Christmas decorations and you know, the seasons. Like when my mom would put up the Halloween decorations, I liked that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was an only child, so I was kind of a spoiled person, let's just say. And
did you get a lot of the things that you asked for?
Yes, I did. I did, and you know, yes, I did. I don't know. That's such an interesting time for me. I know that I never liked school. I actually hated it all through high school. Even I always felt like I just wasn't giving me what all these other kids seem to be liking or getting. I didn't care about sports. You know, I really just liked music.
Yeah.
And that became more apparent around, what year would that have been, or what age? Probably like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And my dad bought us a jukebox. And that's, I think, when it started.
Wait, you had a full size jukebox?
Yeah. He's like, I think we're gonna buy a jukebox. Because my parents were kind of almost Mad Men style.
Uh-huh.
You know, that era.
Yeah.
And so they would have their friends over and have dance parties, and so I remember having to go down there and shut that off when I was trying to go to sleep at night, you know, like, hey, there's a kid up here trying to go. I mean, I was doing last call when I was like 10. Can we just shut this down? There's a child upstairs that needs to go to bed. But at the same time, you know, it was really cool because we would go to, we'd go buy singles, and I just got so excited about that, about records and
yeah,
about putting them into the jukebox. And then I got to type out the little thing that you put in the jukebox thing so you can see what record you're going to play.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would type it out. So old school.
So I'm picturing, in my mind, I'm picturing like one of the jukebox that had like the lit up border around it, right? With like the fluid that was in it, almost like a lava lamp.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. No, it wasn't like that.
Okay.
It's different, but still lit up, but you could also display the single of the week in the little area. So you could put your whatever, you know, for me, whatever single I thought, like maybe it's like These Eyes by the Guess Who, like, oh, I just bought, this is totally the song right now.
Yeah.
So I'd put it up, whatever it was. And so I would just sit in our basement and just wonder all the time. As a 10-year-old kid, I just did not understand how is it that these people are making these records? I don't know why. And I would really wonder about it a little more than most 10-year-old girls.
Right.
Probably.
Right. Did you have, it sounds like your parents were pretty into music as well. Like, were they kind of steering you in a certain direction?
No.
You know, what they like to listen to, or they pretty much just gave you full range of getting whatever you wanted?
I don't think so. My dad loved big band, like Benny Goodman and stuff like that. But he also liked Creedence Clearwater. So I thought, wow, Dad is kind of a badass. I just didn't know, and I didn't have an older brother and sister to steer me.
Uh-huh.
So, I think a lot of what the fastbacks raised on was the fact that we figured this out all on our own.
Sure.
I didn't have somebody like an older, cool sister, like, you know, don't listen to Jefferson Airplane. Don't listen to the Archies. Like, I don't know. What's the difference? To me, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Same. I just like good music. And so, you know, I would just buy singles and put them in there, and I would just stare at these singles and wonder how it happened.
Yeah.
Like, who is Jackie DeShannon? Why did she get to have a record out? What's happening? How does this? I asked questions that most 10-year-olds didn't even understand.
Sure. Sure. Well, yeah. I know that's something that I used to think about as well. I think there were like on the show Sesame Street, right? Or Mr. Rogers or something like that. As you watch it as a kid, they show you how they make certain things, right? Like one that really pops out in my brain is like watching them make crayons, right? Which, by the way, to this day, they still have that same video of a crayon manufacturer making crayons that my children are just fascinated with. But there was another one where they were actually making and putting together vinyl records back in the 80s when I was watching it. And
wow.
I also found that super fascinating, but they never really showed the recording process, right? They never showed, like, you know, how the musicians are making the music and how the sounds are you know, really being recorded onto the final record. And that always fascinated me too. I always used to think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just didn't understand. And I, you know, this is long before I thought I could ever be in a band or play music. I just, that hadn't even occurred to me.
Right.
I just looked at a 45 single and I thought, what is it? How does this? And I believe me, I looked at everything on it, like, the people that wrote it. I mean, I knew all this stuff. I was advanced for a child knowing what this is. And so, you know, it's interesting you go forward a few years and, you know, I start, you know, really reading about artists that I love in various, mm-hmm. you know, Circus magazine, Cream, Hit Parade, or whatever it sure. is. But starting to kind of get a feel for and understand, like, okay, so these people were the writers and this person sang. But still, it's like the disconnect. Like, okay, so, but how did that happen? How come they're on a record? Why am I holding this record? And, you know, eventually, like, why can't I have one that I did?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
yeah.
But it was, you know, like a mystery. Like, I don't know how that would happen. I don't understand.
Sure.
But I will tell you a very funny story is that my grandma took me to, we were at Sahara Tahoe, of all things, and we saw Nancy Sinatra.
How old were you?
You know, the top of her game. These boots are made for walking. And
right.
And I knew it because it was on AM radio. And I remember she introduced the band. I must have been like 10 or 11.
Okay.
I don't know. So anyway, I remember she introduced the band and she said, she introduced the drummer as Hal Blaine. And I stood up and almost had a heart attack because, and I said, God, he was on the Partridge Family records. He's the studio musician. And so that's where I knew, you know, looking back, that is exactly the nerd that happened.
Oh, yeah. You were obsessed.
Well, I was. But the fact that I didn't really know who he was, but I started to realize reading every inch of every record that, okay, he's on everything. I didn't know the name was a studio musician, but I learned. And you know, it's sad that kids today, I'm saying it, they don't get to learn, they don't learn from the way we all learn. Like I
right.
learned, I had to put, you know, I was a detective long before the internet.
Yes. That is a great, I love that.
You know, and that's true.
Great.
And I think a lot of older people were, but it was very satisfying. And yeah, it's nice to like, what was that weird Wilco song? What is it? Oh, here it is on Wikipedia. You know,
right,
and that's
right.
great. But, you know, it's kind of cool having to, you had to know.
Well, you really had to, and we've had this conversation many times before. You've probably heard it. You know, you really had to work to discover different things.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh.
It wasn't just blasting you because top 40 radio was always top 40 radio, right? They'd play the same songs over and over and over again. But if you really wanted to like do a deep dive on an artist or something, you had to go down to a record store and really just thumb through a whole bunch of stuff that never got played on the radio, right?
Yeah.
And then, like you said, you had to be kind of a detective. You would read certain things in like Cream magazine or different pop magazines out at the time, and really kind of learn about the artist. And reading, one thing that I miss is reading the jacket on like a CD or even like a cassette tape or a record.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I grew up, and so it's kind of ingrained to me.
Sure.
You know, and again, what you were talking about, you know, digging through bins of certain, looking for something. You know, back when I was going to record stores, and me and Kurt and Lulu were going to record stores, and, you know, we, through the grapevine, had heard about Iggy Pop. And like, mm-hmm. wow. But all this stuff wasn't even reissued, and like, you know, to find that would be the Holy Grail, and just certain records, like, who is Eno? And we'd find out, and like, oh my God, Roxy Music. You just start learning, but it's your own detective work that takes you to this amazing amount of art, really.
Sure.
You're like discovering this in your own time, you know, it just seems like it's way more, it was very exciting at the time. I don't
sure,
know how
sure.
it looks to kids today that are just like, huh, I hear that one Stooges record is available for $5 million on eBay. I guess I'll go check it out. I don't know.
right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So
but
did you have, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's something that I really, I love from growing up in that era, is that it was up to me. I had to go find that. If I wanted to figure out, and maybe I'd find that record, and sometimes we would, and maybe it was like 99 cents, like, really? That's a lot of money, you know? And now, of course, it's like people sell their houses with that shit. But
oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just the treasure collecting in
exactly.
you that it makes it very exciting. And now it's just, I just think people, you know, the internet has made everybody lazy. This is not a new thing. Of course. Like, why not just, I want to find that rare Big Star single that there's only one of. Oh, this guy has it. He's living out here. I'm just going to buy it from him.
Yeah, or you can just listen to it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing is, and I don't have any records. I gave away my record collection. I don't care. I gave it away to Dan Gallucci of the Murder City Devils, a friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
I just got sick of having things.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I have a heart attack enough as it is if I get more than like 12 books in my house. I just don't want things. I'm opposite hoarder.
A minimalist.
Yeah, kind of, but, you know, I have like 5 t-shirts only, 2 pairs of pants. I don't want things. I hate things.
Yeah, yeah. I share that affliction.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, especially when you have small children too, because you just like, you have to keep things. You're
kinda
given things. Well, and part of the problem is that people just give you shit. Right? They're just like, we have this friend that will come over and just, like, basically just leave bags of toys on our front doorstep that her daughter doesn't play with anymore.
That just gives me so much anxiety.
Oh,
I just have
God.
To
yes.
Good
yes.
God. Like, what, you know? And I'm sure that little duck, you know, that was left in the bag of a million ducks, like, oh, no, she'll never miss it if you throw it away.
Well, that's what I've resorted to is that, you know, when they're gone for the weekend or something over at Grandma and Grandpa's, I will go through and start throwing stuff out.
Oh, you are my favorite. Good for you.
Oh.
You are now in my opposite hoarding class.
Yeah, they should make a TV show about us.
Well, they should, and because I could give them some pointers. Like, just how about this? Get rid of everything. No, but I have this, oh my God, this one thing, like, yeah, that thing sucks.
This newspaper from 1934.
Yeah, and guess what?
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? It's already, go look on microfiche. I'm sure it's there. Don't give a shit.
Go. There you go.
Throw it away. God.
So where you were, I totally agree. When you were a small kid learning about all this music, 10, 11 years old, did you have any friends that you could, like, that you were sharing this obsession with?
That's a great question. And, you know, I had friends in the neighborhood and stuff. But, again, I think I knew at an early age that I was a weirdo. And, you know, they just didn't seem to understand. And actually, this goes forward a little bit where, you know, maybe junior high, where I was listening to albums and, you know, just on headphones and I just knew something was different. I didn't know. I just knew that something was different because my friends didn't appreciate the fact that that last verse was better than the other one. And it's because of a key change. I didn't know what it was called. I just knew it sounded better.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would try to tell them, like, do you hear that? And like, yeah. And they don't care. They're just like looking at something else, poster of David Cassidy or something, like, God damn it. Why don't you see that this is different? And I don't know. I think I was starting to take things apart in my mind and didn't know what to call them at the time, but the obsession had started.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Now, did your parents see this obsession? I mean, did they try to cultivate it with you?
Well, I don't know. They were just, Kim's very into music. I don't know. I mean, they did. Well, they were not trying to stop it, and I wasn't. They did, actually, good question, in that they actually rented me a fake Telecaster and a Champ amp for my birthday for, I don't know, a month.
Uh-huh.
Just because I think I told them I wanted to play guitar. Oh, because I'd already had an acoustic guitar and took lessons, and, the guy was like, let's play Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley. Like, oh, no, that sucks. That's a terrible song. And so I just put that away. And it was also a 12-string, so I could never tune it. I didn't know what
man.
I was doing.
You started out. You started off on a 12-string?
I started off at a deficit.
Oh,
clearly.
My God.
Anyway, so I put that aside. I'm like, yay, just get this. And so they did. And mm-hmm. I think I blew the little Champ amp out that day when they got it home. And I don't really remember. I know that a couple people showed me some chords. And then, okay. So I was probably like 17 or something. I don't know. I guess for a girl at that age, maybe younger, I didn't have anybody to look towards as far as a role model or like, because in my mind, if I can't be a rock star and if I can't play like Angus Young, then I can't do it. And I can't play like him.
Yeah.
Now, in the perfect world, I would have made it that I'd be Malcolm Young because he's the best person ever in AC/DC. But I just didn't know what to do. Like, okay, I guess it's not going to, this won't happen. And then thankfully the Runaways and the Ramones happened.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm at. And that's what saved me. And I think a lot of people, not just girls, but like a lot of people realize like, oh shit, you don't have to be good. You just have to play music.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So do you kind of mentioned this, but you think that was a function of not having enough or not having any at the time female musicians to kind of look up to and have as role models?
Yeah. Yeah, because there weren't any. And,
yeah.
And, I think both Kurt, Lulu, and I all grew up on AM radio, which, I have to give a shout out to AM radio because, it really was such a weird thing in that, that's back before they put it into genres. There was no alternative this or whatever this.
Right, right.
It was just, you had a Helen Reddy, I Am Woman next to Iron Man,
Sure.
So you had everything. And I remember like I just think that was kind of a cool time. And so we all kind of grew up with that. And I think that is kind of what informed us as a band in that we liked so many diverse things that it was all okay. We weren't the people like, fuck that. That's soft rock. Like, I mean, I went and saw Bread in concert, first of all. I don't know how many people can attest to that, but I'm saying it right now, right here. And I love some of that stuff. But
sure,
I mean,
yeah.
Mother Freedom is a heavy jam.
Do you remember?
Anyway,
do you have? Is there something that stands out in your mind from your younger days? Is there something that stands out in your mind, whether it be like a concert or a record that you found out about that really just blew the top off of everything?
Oh, there's a couple.
Okay.
So I'll start with Elton John. I want to think it's his first time in Seattle. Played at Seattle Arena.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was for the Honky Chateau record, which is incredible. I mean, Elton John is kind of one of the things I'll always go back to. I adore him, and those first records informed me. And I think I'm pretty sure Kurt Lulu would say the same.
Yeah.
so, but I didn't know. I'd heard of him. I liked his records. I'd heard on the radio, but I did not know that he kicks over his piano stool and goes fucking Jerry Lee Lewis all over that shit. Yeah. Didn't know. And it was like, what the fuck is this? This is so good. So that was one. The other times that just threw me for a loop, Kiss.
Yeah.
First Kiss show in Seattle. And I say that because it was right as they released Hotter Than Hell. And because we didn't have videos back then.
Right.
I didn't know there was like blowing up explosions and fire. I had no idea. Didn't know. So I went there and just, I mean, I've never seen a show like that
right,
in my life.
Right.
And also the first Queen show in Seattle again. And who was the opening act? Kansas. Hilarious. Yeah. But anyway, that another one that just, I just mouth open stunned. And then the real, I think the real one that really is two, and it makes sense, but the Ramones first show in Seattle at the Olympia Hotel, or it's now called, I don't know what it's called. Anyway.
I don't know what the, yeah, I don't know what the Olympia Hotel was.
Well, it's now something different. Uh-huh. And it was when Leave Home got released, and first time they'd been here, and it was, it ripped my head off. And then also the first Clash show here. And
oh,
that was
wow.
at the Paramount, and that was for Give 'Em Enough Rope. And so that was defining moments. And there was so many more, Patti Smith. I mean, so many incredible punk rock bands came through at that time, and they all just defined everything for me. And but really, those are the couple of the ones that just threw me and,
yeah.
and just made me think, like, God, if I could do something like that,
then you'd be golden.
Yeah, but I didn't know what that would be. Like, what is that? I don't know.
Sure.
I mean, I joined a band, this band, The Radios, that we didn't put on any records, but basically joined it because I was in love with the singer guitar player who was adorable. And so I joined that band. And it was really good. It's like 60s kind of, it almost like Blondie is
okay.
what it reminded me of.
Yeah. yeah.
With a farfisa and a sax. Like, wow, this is cute. And then, you know, slowly but surely the Fastback started coming up. And I don't know. It's weird how people start playing music.
Yeah.
It's all so backwards and it doesn't make sense. And that's good.
And a lot of the time it's very fluid too, right? Like the way that you're describing it, it was just like, it was pretty much just a natural progression for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's about things you see and, like, you know, I jump ahead to, like, the Clash and the Ramones. That's a little later. But, like, earlier, like, I'd like to do this, but I don't know how. I don't know how to play guitar. I can't.
Right.
I'm no Angus Young. I'm no Richie Blackmore. What am I going to do? Well, you know, then and, you know, again, I think so many people we know say thank God for punk rock because it showed you, like, fuck that shit. You know what? How about this? There's three chords. Play them.
Yeah. You didn't have to be a master.
No.
Right.
You didn't. And it's funny what you can do with those three chords.
Yeah.
You know, throw in like, you know, two more and you're good. Hit.
Well, let's do this, Kim. Let's go to our second musical break. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Kim Warnick. Be back in a moment.
Now you're
how your mind was open to all this new music that was coming out, and how you kind of folded that into actually playing it yourself. How did you, like, you said that you had this first band that you guys never recorded anything. What was the name of that band again?
The Radios. We played a couple shows, or maybe two or three, and it was fun. Again, I was excited. This cute guy asked me to be in it. But it was good. It was actually, like I said, it was like 60s kind of Farfisa pop music. He wrote really good songs.
Yeah. So what was the music scene like? What year are we talking here?
Oh, 77.
Okay.
Oh, or maybe 78. I might have just graduated high school, I think. The music scene in Seattle was, there were some really good bands in Seattle. I mean, we had a lot of cool stuff. It was all under the radar at that point because there was no way to get that out. I mean, people were maybe starting to release singles.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of good bands, the Blackouts. I mean, they came from the Telepaths. We had the Enemy. We had the first punk rock club in Seattle called The Bird, where I saw, my God, like the best bands ever from the time, like the Weirdos, the Avengers. I saw two nights of the Avengers that to this day stay with me, played me. It really was what you want to see. If you think you like punk rock and the energy that brought, they did it. It was hard to believe I was seeing it.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I mean, Seattle was just learning how to, Seattle got pretty lucky. We had a lot of really cool bands. We also, this place called the Showbox, which still exists to this day, started having bands there. Like, I think the first UK punk band that came over was Magazine, which is amazing. Howard Devoto of the Buzzcocks, his first band. And from there, so many good bands we get to see. And we were really lucky. I never felt like the Fastbacks fit into much of that. Just feel like...
How come?
We were like... because we weren't very good. And I'm not saying that to humble myself. I just say we were just starting to learn how to play our instruments.
Yeah.
And, I just felt like the little kid band, and, people seem to like us and want to help us out, but I don't feel like we were that good. And, so I don't know, maybe we had bigger, intentions in what we came from. I mean, we all like, the bands we liked were professional bands and really good. And
sure.
We also understood that, the punk rock bands, I mean, of course we loved all of them. It's where we came from. But I don't think we were very good in the beginning, and which is fine.
Well, I think most bands probably aren't great when they first start out, right? There's a lot of kinks to work out there.
Right, and that's true. And so I get that. But, after, it's interesting, Kurt has unearthed a lot of early Fastback songs that from like 81, and it's interesting to hear because I am amazed that I feel like listening to that, kind of proficient. It seems like we're kind of better than I always thought of us as being.
Right, right.
So, anyway.
Well, that's kind of a cool thing, though, like listening back to that and going, oh, yeah, that's, yeah, that actually worked.
Yeah, it did. It's very interesting to hear. I mean, this is like decades later, when you...
Sure, sure.
You're saying when you start a band when you're 20.
Yeah.
And you're still in it.
So, right, right.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. So what was the, what was the impetus to get you to switch from guitar to bass?
Well, that band, The Radios, I played bass and guitar half time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I don't know. I know that Kurt was in this band, The Cheaters, and they would play at the Bird sometimes, and he decided he just started to want to play drums, and so he would play drums during the day and practice the drums in his practice place, in their practice place, and I don't know. I don't remember anybody saying, like, let's start a group. I don't think so.
Right.
I know that it happened, and I was the bass player. I had been playing bass, so to say that I was the one that was most proficient at her instrument is hilarious, because not really, but Lulu was just learning how to play bass standing up, or play guitar standing up, and I don't know. It's like stupid. Let's do this. And I never sang in my life. I never sang. Never. So
that surprises me a little bit, because I love your singing voice.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. Honestly, I never sang along to the radio. Didn't do that. So Lulu was the singer. And we just like did like Beatles covers, Damned covers. Like, we're just all over the map, and I don't know, somehow, I don't know how, I don't remember how it kind of morphed into that I would end up singing these songs. There was no conversation. Not like I asked. I personally would rather not be the lead singer ever, but it just was the way that it was.
How come?
I don't know. Good question. I don't know. I don't know, and I didn't ask, and it just happened, and I don't know.
Now, is that partially because of the partying that was going on as well?
No. The partying was always separate for me with what was going on, and especially the hardcore heroin addiction that happened. No, that was never included in the Fastbacks. They were not involved in that. So that was something else. I don't know. I just, that was what happened. And then I was singing these songs, and okay.
Yeah.
I didn't question it. It was kind of just like kind of walking the plank all the time. I didn't question it. I didn't hate it. Just that was what I was doing. And you know, the songs Kurt wrote, right, are so good. Like, how could I not?
Right. Yeah. So you just offhandedly mentioned the heroin addiction.
Offhandedly. Yeah, because that's not a big deal.
Right. Yeah, you know, it happened.
That did happen, and it was really bad. And that went on for a few years. I went to my first rehab in 89.
Yeah.
I have not used heroin since then.
Congratulations.
But then, of course, you know, throughout the years, I mean, really, alcohol is what brought me to my knees, as they say.
Yeah.
And tons of coke, just trying to keep my balance, like, get too drunk, do some coke.
Right.
Get too high, drink some more, and it's bullshit, the balancing line. So, you know, I was dying.
Was that part, like, did this all start because of kind of the music scene that you were in?
No. And I, you know, it'd be easy to say yes to that because it's Seattle. No, my bandmates were fucking horrified what was going on with me. They were not involved in that scene. This was on my own time, and they knew what was going on, but it was just awful. And there was a, you know, like all the lying and the hiding and all the bullshit.
Yeah.
No. You know, it just got, it was very tiring. Really.
Yeah, sure. How did that start for you then? I mean, it doesn't sound like, you know, the people that you were hanging around with the most in your band, they weren't really into that scene. How did you get into it?
Because other people were into it. And you know what? I was like, you know what? Sure. Why not? Let's see what this is like. And of course, damn, off to the races, as they say. So, you know, and then you know, one thing leads to another. You find people that are in the same thing. And, you know, it divides your time between the people you know and then the people that you know and they know, but they can't know what you know. It just becomes a big fucking secret, and it just gets, it's very tiring, really. Mm-hmm. And it's always tiring when you're trying to keep these secrets. It's really exhausting. And yeah. I've been exhausted from this so many times in my life.
Yeah. So when did things really start ramping up in the I guess the drug and alcohol?
Well, which time? Part I guess of your life? I guess you're assuming the first time.
Yeah. So
the first time was 1989.
Yeah.
And I finally ended up going into my first rehab, and I, you know, it's weird. I love rehabs. I do really well in them. I turn into a star pupil. Oddly, but I think it's just I love feeling better and getting better, and that was good, and I felt good for a while. I mean, I still came out and drank, but you know, and then I started working at Sub Pop. This is like 1990. I married Ken from the Posies. You know, things. I felt like I was living a regular life. But I wasn't, it's such a weird thing when you look back and think what you've done and what you tell yourself. You know, I was on a collision course for sure, but I never used heroin again, but drinking was going to get the best of me. And I kind of knew that.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine, especially during that time that was kind of a normal thing, right? I mean, you're working at Sub Pop, things are going pretty splendidly over there.
Yeah.
You must have been just
sometimes
completely
at
surrounded
times.
By it.
I mean, at times, I mean, the place is, you know, out of business, not out of business.
Right.
I mean, this is in the early 90s, but yeah, so it went well for me and it went well for a while. I mean, Ken divorced 96. Just things just, you know, because the actual issue had never been addressed, it was still there in the background. And it took a while for it to really try to kill me. And that happened throughout all kinds of stuff. But really it happened New Year's Eve 2011 when I tried to take my own life.
Really?
Yeah. I had gotten out of a rehab in L.A., a month before that, and started drinking, and I just could not figure it out, and I just couldn't do it. And I just said, you know, I don't know. I'm putting it out there.
Yeah, yeah.
To make it out. But anyway, luckily, people did help. I got put out here, the East Coast, went into, you know, a rehab that saved me. I actually heard the message for the first time, and
What do you mean by that? Heard the message for the first time.
Well, I guess what I mean by that is you go into different rehabs. They all have their own way of saying, like, here's what you need to hear or what you need to know to save your life. And this one was different. This one was like more punk rock. Like, here's what's going to happen. I don't know. It was just more of what I needed to hear. I don't know how to explain it other than that, but I got it. I heard it for the very first time ever, and stayed there for 4 months.
Uh-huh.
And then I moved into sober living in Portland, Maine.
And that's where you are now?
Yeah. Yeah. And that happened in April 2012. And you know, but again, I got the message, but apparently not enough, because I relapsed out of two sober houses. I lived in a hotel on the ocean. I know that sounds amazing, but it wasn't. so I was still finding my footing out here. Mm-hmm. Still kind of screwing up.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So it's just been a wild ride, and you know, after my brother died, my brother was killed in 2014.
Right.
And that's kind of when I heard the big message and like, just stop. And so it's been that long, been a couple of years now for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you found your path. You know,
it's been interesting.
It takes a while. But it's good that you found it, you know?
And, you know, in the meantime, there was all these weird surgeries I had to go through in Seattle.
For what?
Well, this is the other part of the story. Well, in 2006, I had a 12-pound tumor on my abdomen.
Really?
12 pounds. You know that's a child, right?
That's huge.
Yeah. So that's why I kept falling over. And I was also so fucked up and drunk all the time. And they had to take that out, which they did. And then 2 months later, maybe, not even, I was paralyzed in a wheelchair.
Really?
Because I had two tumors on my spine, so my legs stopped working.
Now, what were those caused from?
Two tumors on my spine.
Well, I know that, but, like, what's it, do you have a condition that, like...
No, it was just something that happened.
Really?
And they took me out, and I can walk now. But I had to go through, I was in the hospital for a month.
Oh, my
learning
God.
How to walk again. Yeah, learning how to walk again. I got strung out again because I'm on the best Dilaudid ever.
Right, right.
So I had to be. But I had to go from wheelchair to walker to cane and a lot of physical therapy. I stayed at my brother's house and went through this. And it was... You know, honestly, it was really a lot of stuff I've had to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. I can understand that. One of the biggest things that scares me, I suffer from like lower back problems, and I have since high school. And like one of the biggest things that scares me now, especially since becoming a father and stuff, and having my own addiction problems with pain medicine, like the biggest thing that really scares me is like having a massive, you know, back issue that lays me out for a couple weeks, and really kind of needing to, or you know, relying on pain medication to get myself up out of bed just so I can function and be with my family. But that what that leads to, and I think I had this same discussion with Duff McKagan, is like, as soon as you start taking that stuff again, it only takes like a day for you to get back to where you were.
Right, and that's so true, because, you know, it's just so interesting that like if you were a junkie, or if opiates were your thing,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know, back before, so say when I first started shooting heroin, you know, maybe 5 days in, like, I feel like I have the flu. I didn't know. I didn't identify it as like, oh my God, I'm dope sick.
Right,
well, yeah,
right.
You are. And so but because as soon as you become that person, because that's happened to you, it happens right off the bat.
Right.
And so, you know, somebody told me, it's like, you know, what is it? Oh God, I gotta get this right. I always tell the joke wrong, so it's not even a joke. So, never mind. I'm not gonna even try. It makes sense, but I won't do it because it's so crazy, and I will actually embarrass myself. But
yeah.
What I'm saying is, it takes like a day for your body to go, oh fuck, I love this shit. I want to do, can we get more of this? Because I like it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and so same with alcohol. It's like, oh yeah, this stuff is good. This is what worked.
Right.
Didn't work,
right.
But you know, and so, you know, so that thing was very difficult for me because, you know, finally the drugstore said, no, you're done. And I knew that. And I was taking 9 of them a day.
Right.
So the last amount they gave me, they said, you have to make this last, you're doing this wrong. Like, oh, you're wrong. I know what I'm doing. I'm a drug addict. Anyway, so I just laid in my brother's bedroom and just sweated and felt like I was going to die, but I was around my nephews and I was not going to let them see this happen.
Right.
And I did it. I did it. I don't want to ever go back to that place that, and even with alcohol, I mean, I've been to areas that are close to having a stroke. It's very, very scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I, it's very scary. Very scary place to go, and very easy to get to, you know. And you know, my brother's death was very difficult for me, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
And I had been kind of screwing around out here, I have to be honest. And so his death just kind of put it right up in my face, like, don't. And so it's been a couple years.
Yeah. So that was your brother's death was the was kind of the final straw for you and the addiction.
Well,
to get clean.
It was a wake up call to not do that.
Right.
As far as, you know, it's always there for me. It's always in the back of my head, but to honor his memory, I can't. I just, you know, I have to pay attention.
Sure.
And it's very difficult being so far away from home. I mean, going through such a traumatic thing as losing somebody in the blink of an eye, it's really, and being so far away, it's a very different kind of grieving.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's one thing to know that somebody has cancer and they're going to die. Doesn't mean it hurts any less, but I will say this, when somebody just gets hit in a crosswalk and they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not there for it. And so it's still not real for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's brought me closer to my family, but I'm not sure when I'll actually believe it for real.
Right. Do you think that's a part of the reason why you stay out on the East Coast?
No. I stay out here because I don't want to return to Seattle. I'm not interested in Seattle anymore.
Uh-huh.
It's too expensive. It's too out of control out there. I don't feel any affinity towards it. You know, I don't mind visiting, but
yeah.
I go home and like, what is this place? You know, but who knows? I never thought I'd be living out here in Maine. Who knew?
Yeah.
I mean, the Fastbacks played Maine once with Pearl Jam and Dennis Rodman showed up. So, yeah, so, you know, you can't say, I cannot tell you. I could be living in the North Pole next year. I don't know.
Right, right.
But I will say this, I will make the best of it because that's what I
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah.
And this has been a very great time, and I love this town, and I like the small-town vibe.
Yeah.
So I don't want to live in a big place anymore, although, as I say that, I kind of wish I could live in New York, which is hilarious. What would I do, and how do I pay for it? I don't know. I'm just kind of a bunch of question marks, really.
I'm getting that.
I don't want to close anything out. I'm kind of open to most things.
Uh-huh.
I just kind of don't want to drink anymore.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes you have to remove yourself from the situation to you know, to really kind of kick it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
like it took me, because I had, you know, probably some of my biggest addiction problems while I was still in high school. And it took me moving to a different town, although it wasn't across the country, it was far enough away, and I didn't know anybody in the college town that I went to get me off of that shit for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And it really, really worked. And it helped me kind of clear my head quite a bit until later on in life. And I kept on having these back issues and going in and, you know, you lie to the doctor to get more pills. And, you know, it's just a fucking
you have to, of course,
messy
you do.
Situation. I mean, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, certainly when they said, you're going to go to this rehab in New Hampshire, I never thought, Well, I said yes. My choice was nothing.
Right.
Like, nobody will let you stay with them ever again right now because you're scaring them. You tried to kill yourself. You better just say yes. And so I did. Like, yes, 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 yes. And I think saying yes saved my life. I know it did.
Yeah.
And being open, being willingness is the whole thing. And I did that, still doing it. If you want to look at it this way, I moved to the East Coast with 10 cents in my pocket.
10 cents.
Yeah, but I was helped by a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, but I literally did not have the proper shoes. I had tennis shoes with a hole in the heel, and I was just not equipped. I mean, I'm coming to the serious, like, I'm out in the Alaska area, you know.
Yeah.
There's no joke out here, and I just hate the winters out here. I would like to live somewhere else. Don't know where it would be, but I love my town so much. I just do not, the winters, I broke my ankle last winter. It's not easy out here, and I'm lame. My leg is kind of fucked up from being, you know, what happened to me.
Yeah,
so it's not work. It doesn't work perfectly at all. I look like I walk fine, but if you knew what was going on in my mind, you'd be like, oh my God, you're going to crash and burn right now. It's scary. I live in a scary world in my mind, but
I'm
doing it.
I think a lot of us do, though, you know?
We all do. Some people don't admit it. Right now, online.
right.
In a podcast. Kim Warnick, lame duck. I don't care. I got no secrets. Ask me. I'll tell you whatever.
Yeah.
Fucked up shit.
Yeah, man. Well, it's a really tough thing, dude. Like, I'm watching my cousins go through the same shit right now. To the extent of, like, one of them has kind of, you know, left her family and has kind of gone off the rails and left her kids and, with the grandparents and everything like that. And I just don't know, I don't know how to approach that situation, you know, like it's really sad. And it seems like she's too far gone. Like, do you have any advice for me to, like, to her about?
I would say this. She's never too far gone.
Yeah.
I would say have faith, and I know that almost sounds stupid to some people, but I believe that, you know, as long as somebody is still breathing, there's hope.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't know what her situation is. I know that I was gone. So people stepped up and helped. And I know that sometimes it's your time. I mean, my brother just got killed instant.
Yeah.
He should not be dead. And so I don't know. I try to make sense of this. I try to think about God. What does that mean? I don't believe in God anymore. I don't personally, and I've always had trouble with that thought, but that somebody would take somebody like this away, I can't. I don't know. I don't know what I think.
Yeah.
It's been very. The last 2 years have been so difficult for me, but I've made it through, and it's an ongoing process of life, and I guess just be there and help when you can. That's all you can do. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
I wish I had a better, bigger answer, but I have a friend right now that is needing help. I can't help her. I don't know. I'm just can't do anything right now. And so,
yeah.
Well,
there's a certain, there's a, yeah, and, a, it, you know, I mean, you're experiencing the other side of of the addiction process right now, right? Where now you are the friend, and
right,
you know, you don't know what to do.
Well, I do know what to do. I do know what to do, and unfortunately, it is wait for the cry for help. And
sure,
that's all I can do is wait. I can't move things along any faster, and so I have to make sure I can like play a song on guitar that makes me happy.
Yeah.
I can write a little story that makes me happy. Anything to take my mind off of something that could be terrible. I don't know.
Right.
I'm trying to stay positive when it's kind of scary. That's the serious work.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. Now, do you find like, are you happier now? I mean, that might be a dumb question, but
no, not at all. Yes, of course I am.
Yeah,
I'm very happy out here. I'm happy with what's gone on for me. I have a job that's boring, but it's a job. It's a paycheck. I like people I work with.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I am, and I'm healthy. Sober, you know, I have amazing friends out here, lifelong friends that I'll know for the rest of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's always going to be little glitches along the way. Here's a good one. Since I'm very East Coast now, bed bugs. That happened to me.
Oh, fuck. So are you kidding?
Oh, no. This is a thing. They're rampant out here, and that happened to me in my apartment. And it's turned my life upside down, but you know,
yeah,
getting through it, and it's dissipating. I sleep on, I throw my bed away. I sleep on an air mattress, but things are coming back. It's going to be good. I'm going to get a new bed. That's going to be good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just never easy. And then, so this is just, I'm just saying this because whether you're dealing with your fucked up, you know, in the gutter drunk or whatever, this could happen. So,
right. Yeah.
I've been trying to do the right things, but this happened, and I don't know where this came from. Who knows?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. But
no,
oh my God.
I feel your pain on that. We used to live in this tiny little apartment here in Seattle, and we had rat mites. And the thing
what is
with
that?
Rat mites? Yeah, yeah. We had rats in the ceiling, and I think one of them died. And so these little mites that live on the rats, like, go and find another food source, and they found us.
Yeah.
And these things are so tiny, you can't really see them, and they're nocturnal, so they come out at night, and they bite you all over your legs and everything like that.
Well,
and
let me just say
just,
this.
It's disgusting.
I know I could probably do the world's best TED Talk on bed bugs today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, I don't have to script it. I would just go and just blow people's minds. Here's what I know.
Yeah.
First of all, they've never bitten me. Either I must be the worst tasting human ever. Good. I don't have any bites on me. But they can live 400 days without feeding on a host.
Right.
400 days. 400. Think about that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's disgusting.
I live out of, like, at this moment, until this gets rectified, which is close to getting to, living out of, you know, clothes and garbage bags. I just feel like it's kind of looks like a junky apartment, or like I'm moving. Somebody came in like, oh, so you're moving out? Like, yeah, no, I'm living here. and it's a social stigma. Like, oh, shit, don't sit next to me. Like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. It's just been, there's always a little something to keep you in line. And I think this is one to show me, like, okay, step up.
Yeah. Do you ever tell yourself it could be worse?
Yeah. Well, it could be worse because I could be dead.
There you go.
It could be worse. It's the easiest thing to go to. Other than that, I could just still be fucked up.
Sure.
It could be worse, but yeah, I don't know. This is being handled, and it's getting there. And if feel good about it, and there's going to be a new bed in my future, and so it's a glass half full.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it.
I like that.
Jesus Christ. Sometimes it's just been a fucking trip out here, I got to tell you.
I can't imagine living through the winter over there.
Don't ever do it. It is so terrible. And I'll tell you, I now have two pairs of snow boots. Two.
Uh-huh.
I think I owned maybe one when I was a kid, but it didn't snow in Seattle much, you know.
Right.
So I wake up to, when it's bad, I will hear, I'll wake up, and I know, because I'm a slave to the weather, of course, on online, so I know what's going to happen, but I wake up to the sound of the snowplow,
right.
And they're on it. These people are, this place is on it. So I wake up.
Oh, yeah, they got it figured out over there, man.
Of course they have to.
Yeah.
But I wake up, and I think, oh, how much? And then it's like 12 inches. Like, wow, that's something. That's really something. And you have to understand, somebody's kind of a lame leg that can't walk very well.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I could theoretically break my back out here.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a joke. I broke my ankle. I broke my, after Kyle died, that was the darkest, one of the darkest times. He was killed.
Uh-huh.
I broke my ankle. I lost my job because it was terrible, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
And then it was the biggest snow we've ever had. So it was
God.
Yeah, so I just kind of had to power down and just realize, like, I'm being taken care of. Some very, very, very amazing people showed up to help in my life. And so, I mean, I was homebound for 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, and it's not easy. It's not easy to keep yourself positive in those situations either.
Well, it's not, but I have good friends out here. I mean, it's not been a walk in the park, but it seems a lot easier than living in Seattle. That place seems crazy now. I just can't even imagine. So I'm happy out here. I do like the small town vibe.
Yeah.
I don't want to live in a really big, big city, but I don't know. Who knows where I'll go? This is a stopping point for me, and we'll see where I go. But for now, I guess call centers and just doing this.
Yeah. And doing podcast interviews.
Yeah, right. And that. And maybe music in my future. I mean, the Fastbacks keep getting called up for stuff. Like, hey, do you want to do this or that? Like, well, can't. I mean, between all four of us, like, well, I'm out here. So there's that problem. And some people have kids. And so, you know, I guess get at us in 4 years and then set up the date. Because.
Well, do you still have an interest in playing music?
That's such a good question. I guess, yes, I do. I feel like I don't right now. I'm not interested in music right now. I'm more interested in reading and books. But again, I say that, and I've given up music a couple times where I just didn't care. I don't want to. I quit the Fastbacks and this queen because I didn't care. Like, I don't care. Uh-huh. I don't want this. So yeah. I don't know. You know, I don't think I can ever quit music, but I can get disillusioned and bored with it.
Right.
I will never quit it, but to go do it, it almost makes me sick with apprehension and like, what does that look like? And how much time do I take off work? How will I pay my rent? It's so much. So I don't.
Yeah. So it's more of a maturity thing then, huh?
I guess.
You're thinking about responsibility now.
And when did this happen? When did I become an adult? This is bullshit. I don't know. I mean, because honestly, I've been like a little toddler all my life. So now I'm an old, and they're like, oh. Be careful. You need to pay your bill for this. Like, yes, I will do that. Like, that's weird for me. I don't know.
Well, you know what that is, Kim?
No, don't tell me. What is it?
It's sobriety.
God damn you. Yeah, it probably is, and it's probably just getting older and like, don't put this on somebody else and all that bullshit.
Right, right, yeah.
And yes, you're right, but I don't know. Is there a way to do both? I don't know.
I think so. I think you can.
Well, you can.
I mean, here's what you do. Here's my idea because I don't want you to stop.
Hang on. Let me get out my favorite pen.
Okay, good.
What is it?
Make a list.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
oh, not a list.
No.
Damn it.
No. Here's what you need to do because I don't want to see you. I don't want to see you quit music for good. I want you to keep on playing music because I feel like music is a great positive resource for people that have dealt with a lot of shit in their life to keep them positive. I think music is great for that. So you need to get some like rudimentary like recording software.
I have it.
Okay.
It's called Audacity. It's on my laptop.
Okay. Okay. You've got that.
I'm kind of like a modern person.
There you go. And you get a little interface, right? You got a little interface that you can plug like your amp into or your bass into.
No. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, okay.
Friend.
Okay. Get a microphone.
But, yes.
Get a microphone.
Whoa. Okay. Yes. You're moving like at the speed of sound, my friend. This is insane.
Are you taking this down? Are you taking notes?
No, because my brain takes it down, and then I panic about it later. Go on.
Okay. And then you can record remotely. You can record music with your friends remotely. You can send tracks over the internet to Kurt, to Rachel, you know, and you guys can work remotely.
Can you actually, since you are all about Mr. Remotely, can you just, like, email me that information?
I will write the list down for you.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know what? You, okay?
As you know what? As my manager, you're the best. I'm not joking. I'm serious. This is not some joking matter. This is real.
Oh, my God. I would love to be your manager.
Oh, wow. I don't think, you know what? Don't say that.
Don't say that.
It would not be a fun time for you. You might have some fun with it, but in the end, you just wring your hands and think like, oh, you know, I remember the times when I wasn't her manager.
Yeah, right.
You'd have a good time with the times pre-manager.
Right. Oh, my God. Kim Warnick, this has been an absolute honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for asking me, and someday I'll meet you in person.
I really hope so. I mean, whenever you come back to Seattle, I would love to sit.
It's a Christmas story, as we know.
There you go, and we can sit down and share a non-alcoholic drink together.
Some eggnog that I can throw up on you.
Oh,
it'll
God!
Be cute and very punk rock.
Well, then I'd have a story for the rest of my life. So. That'd be my third Kim Warnick meeting.
Oh gosh, I forgot that there's the other ones. Well, the next one I'll try to make more epic, and I will try to make it way better. How about that?
Okay.
That's all I can do.
It's a deal.
Okay, Aaron, thank you so much for. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I can't wait to listen to this at my work. Okay.
I love it.
I'm not joking. That's serious. You saved me. I don't know how many hours that I got to listen to these things, but we can't talk about it because my work could hear about this.
Yeah,
wait,
yeah.
Work, I didn't do that. It's fine. Okay. Anyway, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Oh, thank you so much, Kim. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, there you have it, folks. Kim Warnick of the Fastbacks, Cali Giraffes, Visqueen. An amazing story. And it was, like I said, just such an honor and a pleasure to be able to talk with her and to have her listen to this show. I mean, that is the coolest thing ever. I can't even really express my thoughts and my feelings right now. Kim wanted me to tell all you guys that Cali Giraffes, the first song that we went to for the first break there, Cali Giraffes was a project that she did along with her bandmate Mikey Davis, and that's where she really started to do a lot of writing herself and with Mikey for the first time, and you know, or one of the major times in her musical career. So she just wanted me to convey that. It's a fantastic band. And you can find out more by typing Cali Giraffes into the search bar of your favorite search engine. And we'll have links up at www.air-raid.net. So you can go and check out the Fastbacks, check out Cali Giraffes, check out Visqueen, do all that stuff. Okay? All right, we got into a little bit of suicide talk, so I wanted to take a moment to tell you about the National Suicide Hotline. If you are having suicidal thoughts, I would urge you to reach out and talk to somebody, okay? You can call 1-800-273-8255 to talk to somebody right now if you are feeling down and you need somebody to talk to, all right? We love you out there, and we want you to be safe. Also, if you are having addiction problems, you can call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357 to talk to somebody at SAMHSA, which is a national addiction helpline. We urge you to get help with that as well. Okay? All right. Okay. Let's see. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to give us a little review. Rate the show, okay? It only takes a couple seconds to give us a 5-star rating on there. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and Spreaker apps, or just visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/the Air Raid Podcast or follow us on Twitter at Air Raid Net. We're still going to be keeping that stuff live, people. Or you can email me directly, aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge. Tell somebody about the show. Spread it around. Even though we're coming to an end, we still want you to spread it around. This is the Fastbacks, K Street. Thank you so much for listening this week. We love you, everybody. Be safe out there. Have a great week.